You can find it on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio, because after all, you don't need to download the program from a possibly insecure internet, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
Hey, hey, this is the Gothabilly Man, your friendly neighborhood beatnik, here to announce that The Wrecking Hours is moving back just a couple hours, same evening, on Monday nights, now from 6 to 8 p.m. Tune in to hear us in our new primetime slot on 89.3 FM, WHFR.FM on the internet. We are the station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Yo, this is Daddy G from the Malt Shop. And you guys and dolls are invited to the Concert of Colors, Metro Detroit's 23rd Annual Diversity Music Festival at the Max M. Fisher Music Center, 3711 Woodward Avenue in Detroit, July 11th and 12th from 2 to 10 p.m. each day. There'll be art and music from all around the world and plenty of eats and treats to satisfy any taste. And best of all, admission is free. Two performing stages are indoors, including the one used by the Detroit Symphony, and one stage is outdoors just south of the center. WHFR will be there too. So come on out and say hello. Come join in the festivities. Go to concertofcolors.com for full information. I hope to see us there.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves. And for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, most of the time on this show, we present UFO and abduction researchers. But what about the ordinary person, the ordinary people, I should say, who experience extraordinary things in their lives? For some of these people, it has just become part of their lives. And today we will interview Ron. We'll just use the first names to protect their identity. And their adult daughter, their adult married daughter, Debbie. However, I met and talked with these people at length and can vouch for their integrity and sincerity. So I'll speak first with Ron, and then we'll contact your daughter, Debbie. And so, Ron, welcome to the show.
Ah, hello, Dave.
How are you?
I'm doing really good.
Good, good. So you and your wife both had a UFO sighting in 1967 in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Tell us about that.
Well, we were traveling on a street in Grand Rapids called Leonard Street. We were traveling east to west. And my wife spotted it first. She says, what is that in the sky? And we looked up, and you couldn't miss it, because compared to the rest of the stars in the sky, it was the size of a dime. My wife liked to say it was shining different colors. To me, it was just really bright and silvery colored. So then we pulled into a gas station to get a better look, and there was like at least 20 other people already in the gas station staring at it. And we watched it for a while, and it kind of traveled off to the northwest till it just disappeared. And we stood there staring at each other like, what the heck was that, you know? And then somebody said, hey, look, it's coming back. Well, it came right back over the top of us. I mean, like directly straight up. We stood there staring at it, and then it just shot straight up. It just kept going until it just disappeared. It was just gone. And we just, and you know, at that time, I'm talking almost 50 years ago, you know, people didn't talk about UFOs or flying saucers. We just stood there going like, what the heck was that? So I didn't really put a whole lot on it, you know.
Was there any sound associated with this?
No. When something's up in the sky, it's hard to say how high up it was. I would say when I first saw it, it was like cloud level. And then that's pretty much where it stayed until it shot straight up, just gone. Sometimes people see objects that go over the horizon, and it appears like, you know, they're going up. But this was, you had to crank your head straight up to see it go. It just shot straight up until it was gone.
There's no shape to it, though, or anything?
Yeah, it was, I would describe it as disc shape. It was round.
Okay.
Like I said, my wife said that it was flashing different colors.
Okay.
I don't remember it doing that. But to me, it was just very bright, very silvery, you know, and glowing, just so bright. Wow. You couldn't miss it.
Right. But it definitely wasn't a star, huh?
Oh, no, if you saw it, you know, like I said earlier, when something's the size of a dime compared to the rest of the stars, you don't miss nothing like that.
Right, right. So did you or your wife ever report this sighting to the authorities, the police, the MUFON, or anything?
You know, back in those days, you didn't. I will say this. I went to my father's house, and I tried to explain what I saw. And in those days, if you tried to tell somebody you saw something like this, you just get the look, and people disbelieve you, and almost they look at you like, what, are you crazy? So when that happens to you, you just don't talk about it anymore, because you don't want to feel like ridiculed or, you know, thought of as different.
Right.
So I just kept it quiet all these years. I just kept it to myself.
What made you decide to come out with this now?
Well, actually, it's what happened after that is what bothered me the most my whole life.
All right.
Because in the this was like in late summer. I wish I would have wrote it down when it happened, but you don't think about those things.
All right.
In the fall of 67, in that same year, it comes the greatest, the most mysterious thing could ever happen to my family. I was working second shift at the time, and we had babies that were 1 and 2 years old. And so we used to put the kids to bed around 9 o'clock or so, and then we'd stay up till as late as 2 o'clock and you know, go to bed. Well, that was a Saturday night, and I woke up first at 6 o'clock, and I thought was 6 a.m. I woke up at 6, and I said to my wife, I said, you know, I feel so awake, so energized. Let's go do our laundry and get things out of the way, and we can have the whole day to ourselves. So I didn't think nothing of it then until I walked out in the living room, and I glanced up and down the street, and all my neighbors' lights were on. And I said, oh, what the heck is going on? This doesn't make any sense. And then all of a sudden, it's like you get this fear in you. It's right in your gut. You get this fear. Something's not right. You're scared. And I thought, God, there's gas in the house. Something's going on. What's happening? And for some reason, I put the television on. And it was the last quarter of the Lions football game. I said, this is nuts. This is impossible. So I ran into the bedroom to check on my girls. Now you remember, they're 1 and 2 years old. We put them to bed at 9 o'clock the previous night. And they were laying there sleeping like we had just put them down. They were just laying there so peaceful and sleeping. And of course, I was happy to see that. So I started putting things together, and I says, this is crazy. I mean, how could my kids, you know, how could they have been asleep for 21 hours?
Wow.
I want you to think about that, 21 hours. You know, anybody's had babies know that they cry for food or cry for attention or cry for a wet diaper. My children were asleep for 21 hours.
Hmm.
So I had this fear in me, a really bad fear.
Hmm.
So again, I went, who do you go to? You go to your parents, right?
Right.
So I went to my parents. I tried to explain to them, something crazy has happened. And again, my father said things like, I can remember, you watch too many flying saucer movies. You're crazy. You know, what were you drinking?
Right.
And so again, maybe I tried to tell one other person, and then you get the look. I says, well, I didn't talk about it for 40-plus years after that. I mm-hmm. told nobody.
Right.
Because I just didn't want the ridicule.
Okay, so did you find that you or your wife were hungry when you woke up? Or
The strangest part about waking up was not hungry or nothing. Just we woke up like we were so alert.
Right.
I don't know how to explain it. It's like, wow, it's like somebody gave us a pill.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're just, boy, am I alert, you know?
And the kids,
the only thing I remember.
Yeah. The kids were all right, but how long before they woke up?
I had to wake them up.
Yeah.
I had to wake them up. And of course, I checked them all over,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Babies, you know, that what's going on here, you know?
Right.
So like I said, after that, I just kind of like didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to think.
Right.
But it always bothered me.
Right.
It bothers me till this day. It bothers me.
I guess it would. And then in 1975, there was an incident with your family was visiting relatives at Wurtsmith Air Force Base. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was really a strange one. We used to go up there and visit my brother-in-law. He was stationed there, and we used to go up there and visit him quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night there, all of a sudden, sirens went off. All kinds of lights came on. The phone rang. They contacted my brother-in-law and told him to report to his station immediately.
Hmm.
And I was told I could not leave. He was had base housing. I was told not to leave the house.
Hmm.
And so I says, so, but I went outside the porch just to see what was going on.
Right.
And all I could see was, oh my goodness, I see soldiers running all over. I see jets screaming down the runway, taking off, several of them. They shot out over Lake Huron over there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I asked my brother-in-law what was going on, and he says, I can't say.
Hmm.
And he didn't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says, I can't say. I don't know. I'm not supposed to talk about it. And so I don't know. It's like a height of the Cold War was something going on, you know.
Right.
It actually frightened me. And so he didn't talk, so I didn't talk. I just kind of like just dropped it,
right.
You know.
What was the aftermath of that?
Well, what was crazy was the next day, I had my kids up there.
Mm.
And my daughter come to me, and she starts telling me a story. She's only 10 at the time.
Mm.
She said that her and her cousin were in the bed sleeping, you know. And she says the light a brilliant light came in their room, so bright you could hardly see. And they could make out some kind of figures. And, of course, being that age, it just scared them. It would scare me.
Mm-hmm.
and so they hid under their blankets. That's what they're telling me, the story. You know, they hid under their blankets.
Right.
And they said they just hoped this monster or whatever would go away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, she's telling me, she says, she's got this mark on her leg. She says, what? And I says, she asked me, she says, what is this on my leg? I says, I don't know. I never saw that before. It wasn't there the day before.
Mm.
And suddenly, there it is.
Right.
And so, again, wow, we got strange lights. We got all this kind of stuff. Now, maybe today when people are so in tune to, like, MUFON and UFOs and all everything that's going on, maybe it was what clicked in her head that something happened, right?
Right.
It still didn't click in my head.
Right.
What was going on?
Well, I probably wouldn't back then, you know?
It didn't.
Yeah.
And then another incident that same night, I could only speak for him, my nephew, who was in the same room with five at the time, sleeping with my daughter. He woke. And he showing his mom, dad, and me, he had something stuck in his neck.
Hmm.
And you could feel it. There's like a chip in there. You could something, I call it a chip, something moving around in his neck.
Foreign object.
And he's had that chip in his neck, like my daughter's mark on her leg, for over 40 years.
Hmm.
And I felt it. It's there. And what he tells me is, he's tried to get it out a couple times, but for some strange reason, he doesn't know why. Doctors won't remove it. Even the Air Force doctors wouldn't remove it because he was in the Air Force for a while.
Right.
He says he feels like he's always being watched.
Hmm.
Like somebody, you know, like it's just a queer feeling. Like if somebody is always watching what he's doing or paying attention to him or what's going on, you know, and he would love to get that stupid thing out of his neck. I just hope that he can finally find somebody that will take this thing out of his neck.
Well, it seems odd that if a doctor feels this foreign object, did he have it x-rayed?
Yeah.
And no, there's a foreign object in there, but they refused to remove it. Why?
He told me when he talked to the Air Force surgeons, they said, yeah, there's something there. It's not hurting you. So there's no reason to take it out. And when he saw a family physician, what's really strange is he got the same answer. He said, after the doctor looked at it, he says, yeah, there's something there. It's not causing you any pain or discomfort or this and that. He says, I don't see any reason to remove it.
Wow.
And he tried to explain to the doctor, of course I'm speaking for him,
yeah,
but that this thing is bothering me.
Right.
I want it out.
And they wouldn't take it out. Wow.
It's crazy.
It's like something's telling these doctors, leave it alone.
You know, when him and I talk about it, I'm going to go off on a limb because I'm not a scientist. I don't know these things.
Mm.
But it's like when people examine it, it's almost like this thing in his neck is telling them, leave it alone.
That's it. That's it. Huh. That's the only explanation I can come up with. But who knows, you know?
I don't know. Yeah. I wish he could get it out so we'd all know.
All right. Okay, so let's fast forward now to 1989. And your daughter, Debbie, was picking up her husband. He was out hunting.
Right.
And what happened then?
Well, I owned some property about 4 miles from my house, and I used to let my son-in-law go hunting over there. It was deer season.
Mm.
And she went over there to pick him up at dark, 6:30, 7 o'clock or so. And she picked him up, and they're heading back to my house. Now, you remember, I'm only 4 miles away from this property, and they probably were halfway back to my house where they came to a crossroads.
Mm.
And my daughter looked off the side, and she saw a huge triangular-shaped craft. She said it was like well over 100 yards across, and it had a bright light on each corner, and it was just hovering there in the sky, and she was like mesmerized by it. And so she pulled the car over to the side, and she explains that the craft kind of like floated. It didn't have to go very far, but it kind of floated over the top of her car. And then all of a sudden, the brilliant light was so bright in her car, she couldn't even see. It was just, she had to cover her eyes. The whole car just exploded in light. And then the next thing she remembers is crying, scared, all kinds of bad feelings. And she just stomped on the gas, and she found herself racing to my house, which is less than 2 miles away. When she got to my house, she was still scared and afraid. And I says, where have you been? She says, well, she explained the story. And I said, well, you look what time it is? And it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours later, it took her to get to my house.
From 2 miles away.
From 2 miles away.
Wow.
So I believe my daughter. I mean, if you were listening to her explain the story, you'd believe her. I mean, the fear in her face. So I called the state police, and they said they saw nothing, they heard nothing or anything. So I said, well, okay, I'll call the local airport. Yeah. I called the local airport. I asked for, did you see anything on radar? You see anything? Nothing. They said, nope, nobody's reported nothing. Nobody's seen nothing. We don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, nothing to see here. Move along, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, her husband, obviously her husband was with her at the time.
Yeah, he didn't take it well either, but he's the kind of guy that clams up when there's something that bad happens. You know, some people want to talk.
Yeah.
Some people just want to sit in a corner and don't do nothing.
Right.
They can't handle it. No, you don't understand what I mean by that?
It's a defense mechanism, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what do they call that? Flight or run or flight or fight?
Flight or fight, yeah.
Yeah, so his idea was just to get
flee.
Away.
Flee, yeah, all right. Wow. So there was nothing, there was no implants or anything that happened with your daughter or her husband, to your knowledge? Of course, I'm going to interview.
No, I just don't recall. The sad part about these incidents that have happened over 50 years is I wish I'd had enough sense to write them down like a journal or a diary right then at that time.
Right.
But it's kind of like when people see an object or they see something unusual. After they stare at it for 5 minutes and it leaves, they say, oh, I should have took a picture.
Yeah, right. Some people do, but most people do not. And most people just walk away and as if nothing happened. And then the next day they say, I know that happened to my family when we had our sighting. We just walked in the house, went to bed, and then the next day we said, wow, that was something, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So you've had these experiences as recently as like 2 years ago, 2013.
That one was really a strange one. I woke up in the middle of the night. Something woke me up, and I looked in my wife's direction, and there was like three figures, grayish figures, standing there, like looking down on her. One was about, I'm going to guess the height. One was like 5'8", 5'10", somewhere in there. One was like a little shorter, 5'5", or so. And then one was a little guy, about 3.5 feet tall. I couldn't make out any features. They were just gray. You knew that it was like a figure, but you couldn't get any distinct view of what they looked like. Yeah. Well, it scared me. So I like do like most, any husband should do, I jumped across my wife, thinking somebody's in my room. I tried to hit him, and I swung at him, and it was like, I know I'm hitting him, but I don't feel nothing. And then my wife woke up, of course, and she goes, what's going on? And I says, there was these three things in the room, and they were staring at you. And She says, well, maybe you're having a nightmare. Mm-hmm. You know, I says, well, boy, that was a nightmare. I don't want another one like that.
Mm-hmm.
So about a week goes by, and I wake up. Now these same three things are on my side of the bed staring down at me. And this is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I try to hit them. How to explain it? It's like if the figure was made out of a cloud, you swing your fist, and it goes into this cloud, but you don't feel nothing.
All right.
So then suddenly they just kind of vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And I laid there in bed, and I said to myself, if they ever come back again, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to fight this. I want to fight this. I want to know what they are. What are they doing in my house? I said, I'm going to do everything in my power not to be scared. I want to talk to them. So about a week and a half goes by. I wake up. They're in my room again. So I like, okay, control yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to them. And I says, what do you want? What are you doing here? And I got no response. They just stared at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, leave me alone. Leave us alone. Get out of here, you know. And then I watched in absolute amazement. These three things walked right out through the wall of my bedroom. And I mean, when you experience something like this, it's just like, I mean, you never forget it. It just burns right in your brain.
Right. Taking control, that is the object, right? Well, Ron, I appreciate you sharing these very personal stories with us. I want to get with your daughter Debbie, and I'm going to give her a call, and we're going to finish the show with talking to Debbie and verifying some of these stories that. The accounts that you've had, but
I would like to say this before you go, David.
All right,
I want to personally thank MUFON for giving me the opportunity to express myself.
Yeah,
because it made me feel a lot better to know that, like they say, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
Okay. And I just that's what I want to say.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Ron, for sharing these experiences with us. And I'll be getting with your daughter, okay?
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. 30 years, we're just getting started over here. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and I'm going to give Ron's daughter, Debbie, a call. So now we have Debbie on the line. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, good.
Good. We just got off the phone with your dad, and he was telling us some pretty interesting stuff that's been going on with his life and yours. So he told us about an incident while visiting Wurtsmith Air Force Base in 1975. What do you recall about that incident?
What I recall about that, I was only 10 years old at the time,
mm-hmm.
and we would frequently go up there to visit my aunt and uncle, and this particular visit, our parents had gone out, they had gotten us a babysitter, of course the babysitter always puts you to bed early, because they don't really want to watch you, and so I remember they had like two twin beds, and so it was like my sister and I, and my two cousins, John and Wayne. And soon after we went to bed, it seemed like the room lit up, like somebody had turned a spotlight on.
Mm-hmm.
And soon after I saw a figure of something standing at the end of the bed. I was 10, I thought it was a monster or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I became very frightened because it was such a dark shadow in that bright light. And I just remember putting the covers over my head and hoping it went away.
Hmm. And did it?
Well, actually, I don't really remember anything after that until we came back home from visiting them. And my dad had asked me how I got that burn on the top of my right leg. And I told him I didn't know. And he says, well, that looks really funny, that brown burn. I'm like, I have no idea.
You got a burn on your leg?
Yeah, on the top of my right leg.
Okay.
And I had no idea because it was there. It wasn't there when I went there, but it was there when I came back.
Hmm. So you don't remember any kind of incident where you may have burned yourself or scraped your leg or?
No, because it's a totally symmetrical round burn.
Okay.
And I was only 10 years old, so we weren't, you know, we weren't doing anything that would cause that.
Okay. And was your cousin with you at the time?
Yeah, my cousin Wayne was there in the same room with me.
Okay, so what happened with him? Anything?
Actually, he's like 5 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And we had never talked about it. And about 20 years had passed. And we were out one night hanging out. And he mentioned, do you think something happened to us on that Air Force base? And I thought that was really odd because it had been 20 years had gone by.
Hmm.
And he showed me a mark behind his ear. And I said, oh, my God, it looks the same as my leg. And I said, what do you remember? He says, I remember being really frightened. The room was lit up very bright. He saw something that he thought might have been a monster at the end of the bed. And the next thing he remembers is standing in the bathroom.
Hmm. Standing in the bathroom.
Yeah, he for some reason he was standing in the bathroom.
But now
and he just went back to bed. And like I said, we were young, so we never discussed it. And then all of a sudden it came up 20 years later.
Okay, so he noticed, or did his parents notice this burn on the back of his neck at that time?
It was right behind his ear. I don't know which ear. I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how the whole thing came about, where all of a sudden I started thinking, something's not right.
Mm.
And when I saw that mark behind his ear, and it matched the one on my leg, and our stories were so similar, I was like, something did happen to us on that Air Force base back in 1975.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And that had not been discussed before. But did his parents notice this burn mark on behind his ear back when he was five?
No, not that I know of. I don't think he even mentioned it to them.
Uh-huh. It would seem like the parents would notice that, you know?
Yeah, it would seem like it. I know that he has shown it to, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if he mentioned it to his parents or not. He mentioned it to me, but it was many years later. He
right.
could have mentioned it to them, and they just thought, oh, that's a mole or a burn or,
right.
you know, not a burn, but birthmark or something.
Right.
I don't know if he mentioned it or not.
Right, right. But 20 years later, you compared notes and, you know, the skeptic will say, oh, she had a dream of a light and a monster. And but that was kind of like a shared dream, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah. That would be, I think, a bit too coincidental, especially with the physical marks. But have you had a doctor check this burnout and...
Actually, as of right now, one of them on my leg is causing significant pain.
Is it?
Yeah. And my leg spasms. And so I've been to the doctor like 3 times now, and they keep saying it's my joint and my knee. But my knee feels fine. The pain is pulsating from that spot.
Hmm.
Not on my upper leg. I have 2 marks. I have one on the upper part of my right leg and the... on the side of my knee, too. So I have 2 markings.
Okay. Is there a bump there or anything like that?
It's a bump, and it just stays the same. It's just a symmetrical round mark, as if somebody put something in there because it's raised a little bit,
okay.
And it's so symmetrical. I showed it to the doctor last week, Friday, And she told me, she goes, I don't know what that is. She says, I know it's not cancer. I know it's not a mole. She says, but I don't know what it is. She says, but I wouldn't be concerned with it.
Oh, don't be concerned.
That's what they told me when I went there.
It's a bump in your leg. It's causing you pain, but don't be concerned, eh?
Exactly. And then they wanted me to go to therapy for my knee. And I said, that's not where the pain is.
Huh? They don't know. They guess. Have you ever told any doctor about your experience?
At one time, like a year and a half ago, I also have burn marks on each one of my breasts. They're both they're in the exact same spot on each side.
Hmm.
It looks like somebody took a, I guess the only way I could describe it would be like a cigarette or something, and it's like a big burn hole, but they're at one on each side. And the only reason that came about that I even talked to the doctor about it was because I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Hmm.
And she asked, how did you get those two burns on each side? And I wanted to tell her, but I was scared. So she goes, that doesn't look right. It looks like somebody burned you with something. And I told her, I said, well, maybe it's just the type of, you know, bra or something I was wearing caused it. And she says, no, it wouldn't be caused in that area. And so then I looked at her and I told her, I said, well, I don't really want to say anything, but I was abducted and I think that something happened to me.
Hmm.
And she turned around really quickly, and the look on her face scared me. And I didn't want to go any farther. And so I just kind of laughed it off.
Mm. Made it like it was a joke, huh?
Yeah, like it was a joke, because I didn't want to feel, I don't know, she just looked at me really funny, and it made me feel uncomfortable.
Did the doctor take it as a joke?
I don't know. Actually, her face looked serious, because she turned around real quickly. And she stared at me. It was like, I guess in a sense, she wanted to believe me and make me say more.
Yeah.
But then I got scared, and I just dropped it.
Hmm. Well, it may well be that's not the first time she's heard that scenario. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, probably, because she was so quick to turn around and wait for more. And I was like, you know, she's going to think I'm, you know, crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, many years ago, psychiatrists, had patients that claimed alien abductions, and they thought they were schizophrenic, whatever, delusional. And then after the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case became well-known, doctors all over the world started comparing notes and saying, hey, I have patients claiming the same thing. So it may well be that she's had patients and has heard of doctors who've had patients who have claimed the same thing. So I don't know, maybe it'd be do you well to go back and say, listen, I wasn't kidding. I think I was abducted. And go from there. I mean, have you had this x-rayed? These burns are different than the bump?
These burns are different. They're bright red.
Mm-hmm.
They're more like a burn.
Yeah.
Not like a lump round. They're more of a bright burn. As if somebody, like I said, took a cigarette and just burned two holes. But the odd part about it, there's one on each side, and they match perfectly, and they're not anywhere would anything would rub or make that mark.
Right.
But since going through radiation treatments for 6 weeks, the one on the left side is still there, but it shrunk down. So now it's more of like a round brown mark because the radiation made it shrink. And I had also talked to somebody. I said, you know, it's really odd because it doesn't run in my family because I've already been diagnosed twice with cancer. And I'm like, you know, I'm wondering if that's from exposure to radiation.
Radiation, yeah. Very, very possible. People who've been in close proximity of a UFO have had radiation poisoning to one degree or another. And maybe, you know, you should check that out. You know, another thing that it has been, there are documented cases where where people with cancer or other diseases have been cured by being abducted. And amazing, the doctors, you know, this cancer has shrunk or it's gone. What did you do? What happened? And they don't want to tell them. Well, I was abducted, and these little guys worked on me. And
because it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, certainly it would. But so who else besides me have you told about these experiences?
Actually, the first person I've spoken to were my parents. And the only reason I brought it up to my parents was because I never really talked about the Air Force Base thing, because I just thought it was a dream or something until my cousin brought it up.
Right.
And I thought, this is just too coincidental. And then in 1989, that's when I first brought it up to my parents, not about the Air Force Base, but I was picking up my ex-husband from deer hunting, and I left at 6 o'clock in the afternoon because it was already getting dark because it was November. And on our way back, I was in Sparta, Michigan, and we were crossing a road, and I saw a large craft. It was dark gray, you know, it was dark out. It was looked to be dark gray, triangular shape, three big lights on it, and it was barely above the treetops, and it just hovered and made no sound. So out of my curiosity, I pulled off the road and put the window down to look at it. And within maybe less than a minute, all of a sudden the whole car lit up just totally bright, like somebody put their bright lights on in my rearview mirror and hit me, like, right in the face. And the next thing I remember is being totally terrified, scared, crying, and driving really fast. And my parents only live, like, a mile down the road. So when I got to their house, it was approximately, like, 8:30, and I was like, no, I left at 6, picked him up at 6:30. Now it's, like, 8:30, going on 8:45. So when I went to my parents' home, I was crying hysterically, and I told them, I think I've been abducted. Something happened to me. You know how you just know it.
Right.
You know something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my parents, you know, they always support me in whatever I do.
Right.
And my dad's like, well, maybe we should call the police department, see if anybody else, you know, called it in or anything. And it was like a week later, maybe about a week later, my dad was showing me in the paper. He goes, look at this picture. And the picture was the exact same craft I saw, but it was over, like, in Belgium, or it was over in Europe somewhere.
Right.
And I said, that's exactly what I saw.
Right. Right, 89, Belgium had a wave of triangular-shaped UFOs. They were documented. They were chased by their Air Force, and tens of thousands of people on the ground saw them. There were pictures taken of them. And so, you know, they couldn't deny it. I mean, you know, Belgium had to admit something's up there. And so you had your own sighting of one of them, eh?
Well, I just feel that after all these years, this can't be coincidental, because I never even knew at 10 years old that anything happened at the Air Force Base. I didn't even know anything about that till years later. And that was the same time. And then in 1989, my dad reads in the paper, same thing I saw. And these can't be coincidental, the same years.
So when did your dad and your mom share with you some of the incidents, sighting incidents that they had had?
They didn't really start talking to me about those up until about maybe, I don't know, maybe like 5-6 years ago. my dad started, you know, because I was telling him things, and then he started opening up and telling me things.
Okay. So he didn't want, as a kid, he didn't want to scare you by telling you all of these things. Is that it?
I'm sure he didn't.
Yeah. But there comes a point where you've got to say, hey, you know what, this is what's been going on. You know, accept it, don't accept it, but this is what has been going on. And so what about your cousin? This bump on your, does your cousin have a lump?
He had sent me a picture, because we were discussing this, and he sent me a picture about a week ago, and he told me that he was in the Air Force, and I think he said he was in Texas, and a golden light or something woke him up, and he remembered being very frightened, and the next morning he woke up and he had some brown lump on his arm, and it's been there ever since. Hmm. And he even sent me a picture, and I said, yeah, that looks very similar to mine.
Has he had that x-rayed?
I don't know if he's had it x-rayed. He told me if I was willing to do it, he would do it.
He would do what? X-ray it?
He would have it x-rayed or removed or looked at.
Yeah.
He said, but he told me, he said, you do it first. You know what I'm saying?
I'm right behind you, hon. You know? You go first. I'm right behind you. You know? Your dad told me that your cousin told him that he asked a couple doctors, an Air Force doctor, one of them, to remove it, and they refused to do so.
I heard that same story, too. I heard that same story. Mm-hmm. He wanted it removed, and he didn't want it there. Reason being is that I think that I had heard he had asked to have it removed, and they said, no, there's nothing there. You know, they didn't want to deal with it. One of the reasons I think that we want these things removed is the fact of you feel like you're a signal. You feel like you're always being watched, you're tracked.
Mm-hmm.
You drive down the road, street lights go on, go off.
All right.
Watched.
Yeah. And the lights go
again,
on and on?
I might be scared if they, you know, I don't know if something, if you remove it, if something bad can happen to you, or, you know, I don't know how that works. So.
Now, you said the lights go on and off as you walk down the street. Is that what
That's
happens?
That's happened when I've taken the dog for a walk. I walk past the light, it goes off. As soon as I get about maybe 20, 30 yards away, it'll go back on.
Hmm.
Or I can go under a light that's off. It'll go on.
Hmm. Now, is that coincidence, or have you experimented with it?
I've kind of experimented with it because there was a light down the street, and I would have, like, my son go down there. Nothing would happen. And then I'd go down there. It would shut off, then come back on. So I thought, well, that's weird, because wouldn't it happen to him?
Hmm.
And another thing that I experimented with, my dad always said, well, maybe those lights go on and off because of the way your headlights are directed. You know, they have, you know, sensors on them.
Right.
And this has been going on for, like, 20 years, and I'm like, no, I've owned a lot of different vehicles, and all the headlights are different.
Yeah.
So why would, and I've worked 3 or 4 different jobs driving different directions.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be coincidental.
No, I think those street lights are set for daylight hours, not headlights. But what about other mechanical, you know, TVs, your microwave? Does it affect any of that?
No, I've never noticed a problem with that at all. Just lights.
Yeah.
But no lights in the house.
Yeah. You know, Dr., have you ever heard of Dr. Roger Lear?
No, I haven't.
Okay, he's just passed away about a year ago. He would remove these implants from people. And when I say implants, they were foreign objects. He was a total skeptic to start with. You know, they were just foreign objects. He could see it in a in an X-ray, and he agreed to remove this foreign object, although the patient was claiming alien abduction. Well, he just laughed that off until he got in there, and he had a Gauss meter. Now, a Gauss meter measures radio waves. I believe that was the term. I'm not a scientist, so I believe that the term was Gauss meter. At any rate, this foreign object, whatever it was in this person's foot, I believe, or leg, was emitting deep space, oscillating deep space radio signals. And it was attached to the person's nervous system, to a nerve.
And that's what I think the problem is with my leg. I went to emergency. I thought I had a blood clot. I went back to the doctor again, told him I thought I had a blood clot, went back again, and I told him, I said, that big brown lump, I said, maybe I was gardening, and I knelt on a piece of glass and didn't realize it, and the slivers in there form scar tissue, and that's causing me the muscle spasms going down my leg. And they're like, no, no, that's not it.
Well, at any rate, when Dr. Lear cut that nerve and cut that foreign object out, he found that those signals immediately ceased. So it's like, you know, the human body is the antenna hooked up to the nervous system, is the antenna for this thing. And this thing was a triangular-shaped object that could not be cut with a scalpel. They had to smash it to get little chips off of it. And, you know, he wrote a book called The Alien and the Scalpel. That might be interesting to you.
I know it would be.
Roger Lear, Dr. Roger Lear, The Alien and the Scalpel. So at any rate, I wish you luck with that. It's so curious why a doctor would not take a look at it and, you know, it bothers me, take it out. You know, I'll pay you. My insurance company will pay you. That ought to be an incentive for them.
Yeah, I just talked to him last week, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I explained to them, this is not something that's therapy. There's something in the side of my knee that's causing my muscles to spasm where I can't sleep all night, and it's really bad. It's almost like a burning, spasm. Like it burns and it'll spasm. And I said, can't we just remove that? And she looked at it, and she said, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just totally a symmetrical. And that's what scared me when she said that word. She says, that's totally symmetrical. She goes, I know it's not cancer, so we're not going to worry about it.
Well, I am no doctor, and maybe it's not my place to say, but if it were me, I would worry about it. And I would find a doctor that would worry about it. So that's just me. That's my two cents.
Well, if I can't get any results, I'm just going to have to, you know, look at other options.
All right. That's right. So your dad said that he had three incidents of beings by his bedside. Other than this one that you told me about at the Air Force Base, have you had any kind of incident like that?
Only one time, and besides the one I saw when I was 10 years old, the other time was in November of 1996, and I worked second shift. I just came home from work. My son was 6 months old, and I was always worried about crib death and stuff, so I laid him in bed next to me. You know, I get home from work, and all of a sudden, I thought my neighbors turned their back spotlight on, because it lit up my whole bedroom, and I saw three beings next to the bed, two smaller ones and one taller one. And I can remember thinking, what do they want? But at the same time, I was totally frightened. I thought, are they here to take my six-month-old baby? Or I just closed my eyes and just thought, please go away. But you know, that was like 18 years ago. And I look at it now, I thought they were actually physically standing there. But the more I look back on it, I don't think they were actually there. I think they were like projected, almost as if I could see through them.
Hmm.
Like they were just standing there motionless.
Right.
And staring at me. Well, it looked like they were staring at me, but because they made no motion. And it was like they were just watching me. And the next morning when I woke up, I called my dad and told him what happened.
Mm.
And, of course, he believed me. And I said, you know, this is just so strange. And but all my time things are so far apart, like 1975, 1989,
right,
then 1996. And then my last time really wasn't an experience. It was in November of 2013 when I ordered a pizza and the pizza guy came and I opened the door to sign for the pizza and I looked up and there was this large craft. I couldn't see the outline of it at all. It was like three bright orange-reddish color orbs, triangular, maybe probably a mile off in the distance. And it just hovered there.
Right.
And the pizza guy thought maybe it's those Chinese lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, they don't just sit there like that.
No, they go along with the wind. But
no, it just sat there.
Yeah.
And then I felt like I was being watched then, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it turned, and it became just two orbs, one on each. And then it, like, spun again, and then it became three. It went from, like, three, then turned, became two, and then became three again, and then it just disappeared. It just was gone.
No, it doesn't sound like Chinese lanterns. I've, as an investigator, I've heard of a lot of Chinese lantern cases, but that description does not sound like Chinese lantern.
And it was in November.
Yeah, really? Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, they could set those off any time, but celebrate Christmas, you know. But that's all right. But, you know, your dad has mentioned, even though MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, is not per se an alien abductee support group, he has found a lot of solace in those meetings where he can talk to other people. Have you been to MUFON group in Michigan?
Yeah, I have.
And do you agree with that assessment?
Oh, I totally agree with it.
Yeah.
I think it's just so nice being able to go someplace because I found myself just like having some people over for a cookout, and we're not even talking about that subject. And all of a sudden, I'll just blurt it out for no reason, and everybody will stare at me. And so I try to keep it to myself because going to those meetings, at least you're talking to other people, and they have similar experiences, and so you don't feel like you're alone.
That's right. That's exactly what your dad said, you know, because that is right. You know, MUFON is mostly a scientific study of the UFO phenomenon, but, you know, more and more abductees, not just people who've had sightings, but abductees are going to these meetings and talking to each other. And, you know, it's someone to talk to. Someone to talk to. So would you recommend MUFON to anyone who thinks that they have been part of this experience?
Well, I would definitely recommend anybody who's thought they've even had any encounter or anything or even sightings to go to the meetings because it gives you such a better perspective and outlook on, you know, making you feel more secure in what you're thinking. Because
right.
At times you start feeling like maybe I didn't really see, you know, you try to talk yourself out of it.
Right, right, right. But there's no talking yourself out of it, is there?
No, there's really not, because I've tried not to talk about it for many, many years.
Hmm.
And
How did your present husband take that?
I don't know. He's supportive.
Yeah.
But then other times he's not supportive.
Mm.
And because he's seen some stuff in the sky and this and that, but not to any degree of what I've gone through.
Right.
And no, he would always defend me if, you know, if he thought somebody was, you know, thinking I'm lying or something, he would definitely defend me.
Right. Well, Debbie, I certainly, my time is running short, but I certainly appreciate you sharing these very personal experiences with us today, and you and your dad as well. So, and have that burn / lump checked out, will you? Get somebody who will do something about it.
Well, actually, as of right now, my husband called the doctor today and said therapy is not the problem.
Yeah.
So he's trying to get an MRI done on my leg to see if there's something in there.
Good. Debbie, thank you so much for joining us, and take care of yourself, okay?
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. His show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky. Program you're listening to, WHFR Dearborn. Hey, you guys and dolls out there. This is Daddy G on WHFR.FM, making waves. And we're going back to the 50s and 60s. So I invite all you squeezers to close your eyes, hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and cruise on down to the malt shop. Let's put a dime in that record machine and spin some platters. So here we are, back in the 50s.